This is Nick Yurick, and you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Hordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear,
El Hordano Diablo.
And this week, we are joined by one of my oldest friends in the business, comedian Michael Ivey.
What's up? It's Michael Ivey. Check out Happy Black History Month on iTunes or whatever. It's free. Just stream it. Just stream it. It's on YouTube.
Well, free stuff is something we can all get behind.
I like how he plugged right up front.
Yeah.
And just like,
don't
hey,
even trip.
Hey, fuck off. I'm right. Telling you what I'm here for.
That's perfect. So, Michael, why do you hate garbage-ass rap?
It's annoying in a way that is like, okay, so you can make good rap.
Yeah.
Right? And you can just make good rap, right? But then, like, there's other, like, I think in the 90s and 80s, and I'm doing a whole bit about this. Mm-hmm. I think there was some kind of conspiracy, some kind of government fucking control program or something that they took over rap and just started putting out, like, the worst, like, just started playing to the worst stereotypes. I've had conversations with people about this, like, rappers and stuff. And, you know, it just, like, seemed like at a certain point it just turned. Like, it was, like, it was going okay. And then it was just like, hey, let's talk about bullshit. And then everybody started talking about bullshit. And we were like, okay. But the music still sounded good. But then after right. a while, they just stopped making. Even the music didn't sound good.
Hmm.
And it was like, how are these people still selling? And it's like, there must be something else going on.
First.
That's part of it.
What time frame are you, what time period are you talking about when it started to change?
So for me personally, I like it was like in between when Outkast really started getting big and like ATLians, that
okay,
kind of
so
thing.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
all
it
right.
was like a Cash Money thing.
Yep.
And that was like the beginning. Cash Money,
No Limit,
Master P, that sort of thing. Yeah, it just sort of just started to go a certain kind of vapid, empty way. Like it was like, no, I have cars and money.
The grills and the gold chains yeah. and all that
and
all that shit.
Puff Daddy to a lesser extent, but he was kind of a money grabber, so it was like,
oh yeah. And he was a producer, so that makes sense.
Yeah, he was just going with the flow, and I think that was a flow, like some kind of way, like BET, like you know, you've seen the Boondocks episode where they talk
right.
about BET and everything.
Yep.
And
classic.
There was like a certain turn. Yeah. And I think it was just like it was a response to all that the crime in the 90s. And all that stuff, that crime wave. And, you know, the thing I hate about it, I mean, if I can even use that against music, you know, it just seemed like it was just so lame to me. And then, like I would get, like, people would get attitudes and, like, act like they were tougher than me.
Oh,
now, look,
yeah.
I talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how I talk. I understand how I look. But I am authentic. I grew up, you know, on the poor side of Cleveland, and then I moved to the poor west side of Cleveland, which was kind of better.
Yeah.
But it's still not great.
No, it's not amazing. I remember some of the places you've lived, Michael. It's not been amazing, but it's definitely not like gang members hanging out in your driveway with like
exactly.
with guns.
Yeah.
But it's still not great.
So I've had like sort of both experiences where it was like, you know, I sort of understand the upper class black person, I understand the lower class black person. So, like, I would go over to my cousin's house and we couldn't order pizza because it was just too much crime in the area and the pizza guy wouldn't come.
That's so funny. On the way here, we were talking about when I used to deliver for Pizza Pan downtown. And, like, after 11 o'clock, because, like, I had a couple experiences where it was bad.
Yeah.
Like, bad areas that I was delivering to at, like, 12, you know.
And those places get real racist after dark.
Like, oh, and my, like, so what basically, like, I told my boss, I was like, dude, I can't go past 55th, like, after 11:30 or 11
o'clock. I could, but I'm going to need a raise.
No, I could, which that place, I mean, dude, I never, like, so, like, each, like, so the delivery fee for Pizza Pan was, like, $3, and I only got to keep one, and, like, even if I worked daytime, nighttime, it didn't fucking matter. Like, even when I would deliver, like, six pizzas to a business, like, I never got tipped. Like, ever.
What is up with that?
And,
like,
dude,
people don't tip anymore.
Like,
I do
downtown,
DoorDash.
Dude, it's weird, man. It's weird. Like, the place I work now is, you know, it's a six-person crew. We all do everything. Like, so we don't have just a dish person. We don't have just cooks. Like, we all do everything. We all bust.
That's a good situation,
it is,
generally,
because, like, most people pay with card, mm-hmm. and you have the option to, like, you know, we flip it over and, like, you know, you can tip 10, 15, 20, yeah. 25, whatever, or, like, do a custom tip.
Right.
And, you know, when you're standing there, a lot of people, you know, because we just flip it over, we wait for them to pay, you know, mm-hmm. or wait for, you know, because they have to sign. And a lot of people won't, because it's an upper class, not upper class, it's higher end pizza.
Okay, yeah.
And so we get tipped a lot. And what they do is they pool all the tips together and they just add it to our hourly wage.
Fucking, like, commies.
It's a communist. Citizen pie. And it's like,
it works very good in that system. That's the thing about, yeah. It works very good when you know everybody and you can trust everybody.
Well, the thing is like, so when there are some people who hit no tip,
yeah.
but like when you're standing right there cashing somebody out,
yeah.
A lot of people I think are inclined to tip because yep. they're like, I'm going to look like a fucking asshole if yep. I don't.
They did a New Yorker article on this, and it's called tip shaming, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the lamest thing in the world, but like if you're in line and you have a couple extra bucks, you're not going to, like, they're like, oh, I better it's the same thing that makes you like Me Too, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, my favorite though is because we serve beer too, so like if a beer's like, you know, on special, it's like $3 and somebody hands plus tax. So yeah. it's like, cause they're only allowed to drink it in. So it's like, let's say the beer comes out to like $3.21 or $3.25, whatever it is. And like, somebody will pay cash for it. Right. And they want that. And like, it's $1.75.
Right.
And it's like, our tip jar is right there. But like, they fucking wait for every last cent.
I mean, it's Ohio and people are broke. I get it. But like,
I still tip.
If I'm in, you know what I mean? Like, if I go out, I'm expecting a tip. Like, if you have to make me not tip. Like, I'm assuming I'm going to tip because you're giving me food. You're feeding me. You didn't spit in it, probably.
Well, and that's not what we're here to talk about. I understand that. Right. But, like, at the same time, like, I posted something about it on Twitter and somebody was like, you know, I was like, you know, I think it's like, you know, it's customary to mm-hmm. tip. And somebody said something really stupid. They were trying to like tell me that, you know, it's not customary. It's, you know, nice of somebody to do. And it's like, I was always taught it, you know, cause somebody was like, oh, well, what if they don't have the money? It's like, well, if you don't have the money to tip,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have the money for a $16 pizza.
Right.
You
exactly.
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you shouldn't be out, you know, cook some fucking mac and cheese at home, dude.
Right, yeah. It's just a bad, yeah, it's a bad situation.
But anyway, exactly. Whack-ass rappers.
Yeah, those motherfuckers would not tip. No. Actually, you know, one of the weird things is that sometimes those guys would tip to look cool. Like, that's kind of like a famous thing is like they either are just the worst or they're just throwing $50 bills everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when you were talking about like the no limit and all that stuff, like which led to, you know, like Chamillionaire
right.
and like all that stuff. And it's like, it was funny because I'm a huge fan of Chip the Ripper.
Okay.
And what a lot of people don't understand about him is that he took what was popular at the time
right.
and made it good.
Right, exactly.
And like
yeah.
people often overlook him for that. Like he still to this day is so ahead of his time. Like and he
He's
fantastic. He's
I sort of tapped out of rap. Like that was the point where I was like, I don't know, I just started going other ways. Like I was into like I was a total loser, by the way. But I was like, I think I bought
You're in good company
album.
Then.
Yeah. I mean I think I bought No Doubt's first album. I think that was my first CD I ever bought.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Not the first one, the second one. I'm sorry.
Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah. Because she was
CD.
So hot.
Yeah, Gwen Stefani. She's still so hot.
Yeah.
Gwen Stefani is smoking.
Yeah.
And that's a good record.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's listenable. You know what I mean? Like, you'll be like, yeah, this is... But you know what I mean? Like, they made their own music, and they wrote their own songs, and they play their own instruments.
But, like, you know, you were saying, like, how you got out of rap around, you know, that, like, back that time. And it was like... The current state of hip hop, rap, whatever you want to call it, is awful.
Yeah.
Like that mumble rap, SoundCloud, trap rap shit is fucking terrible.
So it's like kind of gone the way of country. There's a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
Where it seems like country at a certain point like just sort of bifurcated into like Garth Brooks, and there was like, oh
yeah, like the 80s,
and a producer was like, and then like once the, and then that's when it's like, you know, all of a sudden they have feathered hair and
Billy Ray Cyrus and
leather vests, no shirt. It's like,
well, yeah, modern country started in like the 80s, and then it evolved into like really bad in the 90s, and like the last 20 years, country has just become like terrible pop,
right?
Like, you know, Republican pop.
so then the parallel there with rap is that it just became more
I mean, it just became like, how can we sell this to strip clubs? You know what I mean? Like, it was like, strip clubs are buying music, and we need to sell this to them. It literally became that, and like appealing to the bourgeoisie blacks. You know, your rappers and your athletes, people that don't know how to spend their money, you know. Like, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's fine. There is an authenticity to that, because if that's your experience and that's where you're at, that's where you're at, and you deserve to have, like, you know, somebody to do that too.
Yeah.
But then it became, like, even more vapid, where it was, like, they're actually, like, I heard a song the other day where the guy, one of the lyrics was, like, I don't got a whole lot of friends, but I have a whole lot of ends. And he said it like he was bragging.
Hmm.
And in my mind, I'm 40 years old, whatever, maybe I got some perspective. I'm almost 40. But I'm thinking, you're a loser. Like, I'd definitely rather have it the other way around. Like, at least, you know what I mean? Like, you know how hard it is to get a friend?
It's fucking, a real one.
Yeah, like, get out of here. Like, it is almost impossible. Yeah, you got to get those early.
Yeah, people aren't trustworthy anymore at all.
And even if they are, it's like, you have to take some time. You know what I mean? Like, it takes, when you're an adult, it takes a solid 5 years to be like, this guy's my friend now.
I used to you know, make friends with everybody, like social butterfly. Like, yeah. But the last couple years, I have like turned into like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, don't trust anybody. You know, like, fuck you. I'm going to smash these two beers together. Get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah. I definitely have like a wait and see, like, like you're applying for a loan kind of thing. Like, okay, hey, how's it going? Hey, that's cool. You know?
Denied.
Right.
You definitely need some references if you're going to be my friend.
Right. And it doesn't count as mutual comedy Facebook friends. Like those fuckers that, who I've never met before, that are just because their friends, you know, have mutual 80 fucking comedy mutual friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, this guy does comedy or did comedy, whatever. Oh, I'll just add him. Like, I don't know you, motherfucker.
That's really weird.
It happens all the time.
I went to this one process where I was basically like asking them, like, hey, how do I know you? Hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I wouldn't get stuff back. And I found out that a lot of that stuff is kind of fake. Like, right. A lot of that is like, you know, just some kind of weird data phishing thing or something, or who knows?
Well, I've brought that up on the show before, and like Shear has said, like, you know, it's, you know, what was the way that you basically described like those people who do that was?
It's lazy networking.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it is. It's like, you know, we have this mutual interest in the comedy, and you might be able to like get me some work because we're Facebook friends. And, you know, it's tough to kind of like connect the dots there from like somebody that you know online to somebody that you want to work with. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
When Facebook first came out, it seemed like it was more personal than it was, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like you're still new to the whole concept of the, like, friend request.
And, well, and like, it was all based on, like, so college kids who graduated could remain in touch with their friends who were out of state once they all moved away from college,
right.
You know, once they all graduated or whatever. That was the initial thing for Facebook, and now it's just turned into, you know, everybody bitching about everything and posting their fucking check out my SoundCloud rap. No, yeah. I'm not going to, because it's on SoundCloud, so it's garbage.
Right. Yeah, almost certainly. Yeah. You ever find one that's like, oh.
Yeah.
You're like,
every once in a while.
Your pants. You're like, oh, this is actually, I like this. How did this happen?
Yeah.
That really made me rethink my marketing strategy, because I was like, how do I perceive people who do this to me?
Right.
And I was like, oh, you got to go like a whole different route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like SoundCloud is just like, because like when I first started doing podcasting like 8-9 years ago, like we first hosted everything through SoundCloud, and it was just like their system in which, like, it's such a pain in the fucking ass. Like, you can't go to, like, on an iPhone, you can't go to SoundCloud's website, like, through your browser and listen to shit. You have to download their fucking app, and it's like, that's a pain in the fucking ass. I don't need a SoundCloud account.
Right.
I just want to hear this fucking podcast. Right. You know? Right. So we all got away from, most of us got away from that. I know somebody who still uses it. It seems to work for him.
Yeah.
But like for me, I fucking hate it.
I liked SoundCloud when it first came out. I like, cause I was on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a web page. Just another web page you pull up. You know, but once it switched to like phone, I don't know. Like I just sort of got away from it. I have a friend who has a podcast on SoundCloud now, and I haven't listened to the second one because it's like it's more complicated. I like it for experimenting. I think it's very good for experimenting and community. Like if I was like trying to put some stuff together or communicate with other artists, I think it would probably be really good for that.
Or find some whack ass rappers to make fun of.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, dude.
Like just like how all those kid, like all those, you know, fucking, I know, like I just, because I worked in Parma a few years ago, and like All those kids listen to that bullshit.
Yeah.
And, like, one of them was, like, a SoundCloud rapper, this fucking white kid. And, like, he's like, check out this song. And, like, it's hard for me to, like, feign, like, oh, that's cool. Like, it's when it's that bad. And it's like, I'll be like, I think that sucks.
You know what I'm going to start doing? I think I'm going to turn into the old guy that turns people on to music, because like, I feel like that's what it is. It's like, hey, did you hear this? It's melodies and it sounds good. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Have you heard this? This is Mos Def.
Yeah.
Oh, it's made my life better by listening to it.
Yeah.
He has some good advice in there too.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's there's just nothing to compare it to or something. And that's, it's so easy.
That's a good public service, really.
Yeah.
Because, man, I don't know if you had this experience in high school, but there was always like this one older kid that would know like all the old shit that would like say, oh, you dress like this. Well, maybe you'd be into this.
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't know.
The like, Jedi master of cool. That just... Yeah.
Dude, I do that all the time. Like when I, cause I just started this job like a month ago, and there's this one kid who's like maybe three, four years younger than me. And like he was telling me some of the music that he was into, and I was like, oh, if you're into that, you need to check out like this band. They only put out one record in 97 and it's fucking fantastic. And I was like, also check out like Machine Gun Etiquette, but because he's like, oh, I'm really getting into the Clash. I was like, oh, then you need to listen to the Damned, because like that's, you know what I mean, like. And I was like, check out this record, Machine Gun Etiquette. And then he comes back into work a few days later and he's like, dude, that shit was awesome. I'm like, thank you. Validation.
Yeah.
I have good fucking taste and I know it.
And it's funny because like you can tell when they kind of have good taste, because they're like, I'm really into the Clash right now. It's like, okay, this is a good start.
Yeah, this is a great jumping off point for us. We're going to be friends.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the rap equivalent for like the Clash? Like somebody that like you hear that they're into this, maybe they'll be into
sort of like the Daywalker of the rap world. Let's see. Okay, so I'm trying to think, because I'm trying to think of my little brother, what he would say.
My start with rap was Sugar Hill Gang, the Beastie Boys, Grandmaster Flash.
Oh wow, you're at the beginning.
yeah. Like that was like, because like that was Run DMC.
It's like first wave, like after they stopped doing it at parties.
Yeah, I like, and I'm still a big fan of that stuff. And I mean, like, love the Beasties. I mean, like I said, Run DMC. All that stuff is like how I started listening to it. So like, the rap equivalent to like the Clash, I would say, would have to be like Run DMC or something like that.
Right. You know, I just thought of it. It's probably the Wu-Tang Clan.
That
I wouldn't say they're garbage. I don't by any standard.
No, I love Wu-Tang.
I think what it is like they are from New York and they're speaking that New York truth.
Mm-hmm.
So it appeals to everybody because it's like that. So like that, if you can get into that and get past, because sometimes they're they're experimental. They're trying all kind of different stuff. Sometimes the beats aren't as good as the lyrics in the song, but they do it on purpose to get the beats across. They do all kind of crazy stuff. There's like 18 members in the group. So if you can get into that weird stuff, then I'm like, okay, well, you can really just keep going and just like try out some interesting stuff.
Okay.
You know? Yeah.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
RZA is a fucking god. Yeah. I mean,
Ghostface Killah, he dropped this single that was, I listened to it, I was like, it's like there's just this, it sounds like what somebody would rap before Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was that evocative and cinematic.
He's great. My favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan has been and always will be Method Man. Like,
it's pretty good.
Because yeah.
They're all good.
What he said, I think one of his lines is like rhymes that cut like a, you know, like that cut like a knife or something like that. And it's like, it is. He's so sharp.
Right.
And like then when him and Redman started doing their own shit, I love, like, Blackout
that
is
album.
One of my all-time favorite duo records.
In the 90s, if you put that on at a party, actually, was it the early 2000s?
That was probably something 2001, like 2000. Yeah, 2000,
if you went
2001.
To a party and you heard that, just stick around. It's going to get fun. Like, and it was at every party.
You know
what
I mean?
Every
that,
real party.
It is like when I discovered that record, because I didn't get into Wu-Tang like heavy until like probably 2007, 2008, somewhere around there. And like then I worked at the Exchange and I discovered like, Redman and Method Man, like, Blackout. And then I started listening to Redman solo stuff, which a lot of that, like, early on was really good. I love him, like, and Method Man together. They're just, like, you can tell that those dudes are, like, best friends.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Definitely brothers from another mother.
I actually, like, got turned onto them because of How High.
Fair enough, fair enough.
And you know what? That's a good movie.
It is.
It's not trying to be anything. For what it is, it's great.
It's a fucking movie about smoking pot and selling pot. And just like it's as good as Half Baked.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
all like all those stoner movies that came out, like Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back, like all those stoner movies back from like the early 2000s, late 90s.
I mean, like it was like. Like, so, what was it? Comedians made Half-Baked.
Right.
So, like, rappers made How High.
Yeah.
And then, like, actors and directors made Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah,
you know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, comic book guys, too. I think you can't say that without saying comic. They're
absolutely.
Definitely comic book guys, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just, it worked, you know?
Yeah. The Exchange was, like, such a beautiful moment in time in Cleveland and Lakewood history. Like, that was where you found new stuff, and, like, you were like, oh, what's this? You know what I mean? Like, I found out about, like, I went into Pizzicato 5. I don't know if you know who they are.
Mm-mm.
It's, like, this weird Japanese group that plays, like, kind of 50 standards, but, like, also adds their own thing. It's
oh,
super
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I think...
It sounds cool.
But it's so
I
fun.
I think you actually told me about that.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm probably the only person that knows.
When I worked at the Exchange, what was cool, like, one of my favorite jobs was, because, like, they stock everything in the basement. Well, I don't know if they still do, but everything, like, backstocked was in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there was a CD player down there, so, like, basically what your job, like... You know, they would rotate it because basically it was a, you know, it was you got to go downstairs, put away the CDs at the end of the shift, put on, you know, whatever you wanted and kind of just like jam out.
Right.
And like that's how I discovered Redman's solo stuff.
Yeah.
And like I would start listening to that shit and then like, you know, there'd be a feature on there and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to check this guy out and like go through and like, oh, here's one of his CDs. You know, it was like very cool to like. Branch out and find new stuff.
I love that the employees would like hook people on stuff. Like they'd do that. Like what is that movie? That movie with John Cusack.
Oh, High Fidelity.
High Fidelity. They would do that thing where they would like try to get people into music in the store. Like watch the shit. And like every now and again, I would hear something and be like, oh, okay, that's interesting, and buy it. And probably for one song, you know what I mean?
Well, dude, I you know funny thing about the Exchange. I don't know if you and me were talking about this, but like. It's hard for me to go in the Exchange anymore because, like, they must have rolled out a company policy, like, company-wide because, like, you remember how it used to be hard to find somebody to open a case for you?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, now they are so up your ass.
Oh, yeah.
They're, like, every, like, 2 minutes, it's like, motherfucker, when I need your assistance, I will fucking ask. Until then, fuck off.
Yeah, the exchange for me was always like my poor my PWT pawn shop.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was that. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's absolutely. Like whenever I needed money, it's like, well, it's time to get rid of my CDs.
Right.
I've probably sold over the course of my 2,000 at least 2,000 CDs to yeah. exchange and made like $5.
Exactly.
I also store credit remember when Next Friday came out. And yeah. My cousin Courtney, she told my mom she was taking me to see like a PG-13 movie or whatever, but yeah. she was taking me to see Next Friday, and she knew I was really getting into hip hop rap, because I said early on it was Sugar Hill Gang, because my mom liked Sugar Hill Gang and Run DMC, so and the Beasties, and then like from there. Like, my second wave of, like, falling in love with rap was N.W.A. and Ice Cube. Like I love Ice Cube's solo shit a lot. So she bought me an Ice Cube CD, my cousin did, because we were going to see Next Friday.
Yeah.
Not edited.
Yeah.
And then I picked out an Ice-T CD because it was, like, in the bargain, and I was like... the first time I heard 6 a.m. you know, six in the morning, police at my door,
right?
It like blew my fucking mind, and like so that's kind of how I branched out and got into like some of the more gangster shit.
Yeah.
But I was still listening to stuff like that was 10 years prior to the time frame that it was at now, because that was like when Nelly was getting popular,
right?
And stuff like that, you know.
Nelly,
and,
yeah.
Well, and I
forgot about Nelly.
The whole point about that was. So she bought me those CDs, and she was like, I'm going to get you something that you're going to like. And she got me Life or Death, Biggie. And, like, that was another one that changed my fucking, like, yeah. blew my mind, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's, if you're not from New York and you hear Biggie, it kind of blows your mind. Like, you're like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
Dude, yeah.
He... Fuck. And then after that was fucking Jay-Z. Like, that's when I got into Jay-Z, probably... He's probably still my all-time favorite.
Okay.
Yeah, I fucking love Jay-Z.
I've only dabbled in all these, like, really popular rap, because I pulled away so hard
yeah.
in the 90s that it was just like, unless you were, like, Outkast or better, I just was not even pretending to...
I mean, the Black Album, dude, it's...
And that's another thing, like, I also kind of had, like, a prejudice against that because of the whack rap.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, if it was even kind of looked like whack rap, I wasn't fucking with it.
Sure.
Unless my friends recommended it to me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was just so, like, this is, like, terrible. Like, it is really bad.
Well, I remember
really
when the Black Album came out, I got it very shortly after it came out. And, right. It just opened... So many doors. It was just like I still think that might be the best rap record of all time.
I'm gonna listen to all this stuff when I get.
I also got into early Eminem, and then he sucked for like 6 or 7 years, and then in 2010 he put out Recovery, which is a fucking fantastic record.
Right,
and then the Marshall Mathers LP 2, which I also really like.
He was interesting because he turned into a pop star, but he still kept his skill.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even, like, the songs you would say were, like, just pop songs.
Like, the funny ones.
Right.
Like Real Slim Shady and, Without Me.
Right. So, like, even those, like, if you just look at straight skill, it's, I mean,
well,
it's up there with anybody.
That one documentary about rap on, I think it was originally on Netflix. And, like, so they were just interviewing basically everybody. Like, from RZA to Mos Def to Talib. Like, all that shit.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody. And then, like, so they would ask them a question. And, like, you know, they'd show, like, certain, you know, guys talking about this, that, the other thing. And then they were like, you know, who's the best MC? Who's the best lyricist? And, like, seriously, they just do, like, this shortcut of everybody where they're like Eminem,
right.
Like every single one of them was like, you can't fuck with them, like, and they're like, anybody who's stupid enough to fucking go after him and try to start a beef, they're like, good luck, because he's gonna slay you, and he's continued to do that.
People forget his best stuff was battle rap.
Oh yeah, that's how he got his start.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was really big in the battle rap scene in Detroit, and he was just one of those guys that, like, what was this? Napster. It was around the Napster time.
Yeah.
So, like, he would get a lot of those like little, you know, mixtapes kind of things like this, or like battle rap kind of things.
Yeah.
And people would just start hearing about it because he was just that good at battling you.
Yeah.
And he would make fun of himself so you couldn't make fun of him.
Yeah.
That kind of like judo defense. So yeah. It was also like, it, and he was white. So like people would underestimate him and just get slaughtered. And it was hilarious. Like,
Have you gotten into any battle rap like locally? Because I know it exists. We've plugged it.
Oh, my God, I should, though.
Yeah. They had, like, a big battle rap show that we plugged a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was, like, $25 a ticket.
It was down in Akron.
Which is pretty reasonable.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's from one of our old sponsors. She was cool as shit.
Yeah. Britt Fox, she...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I it still happens. And yeah. That's cool.
That would be very cool to check out, you know?
That would be dope.
Yeah.
That would be really dope.
I mean, it was down in Akron. Wasn't it at, like, a house or something, too?
No, it was in, like, a warehouse.
Well, okay. I was like, dude, because if it was in, like, a house, I'd be like, I don't know.
I know they also did it at a poetry club.
Interesting.
Called the Womb Room.
Okay.
There was battle rap there for a while.
Womb-Tang Clan.
Womb-Tang Clan. Where have I seen that before? It's like some kind of meme or something.
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm sure it's a meme. I'm definitely not the first person to ever say that.
Yeah, this is pretty funny.
But I mean, so do you think part of there being like more whackness in rap, as it were, is just because it's easier to make now?
I mean, I think that's a big part of it, but I think it all stems to when people are like, oh, we can make money off of this. And it's also that like Motowny kind of like, hey kids, come on back to my trailer, record an album, and I'll give you $35. It's that just like classic. And then it became a thing where I can't prove this, where it was like, we're tired of dealing with these actual rappers. They got attitudes and egos, and they always have demands. Why don't we find some people that can kind of rap and just pump them up? Like I think The Game was the first one that I noticed that was kind of like this.
Okay.
Where he was an actor first.
Yeah.
And then he just got a bunch of tattoos.
Yeah. I remember when he came out because I worked at Blockbuster at the time. So it was like that 50 Cent Game song was really popular. And I was like, okay, who is this guy? He's
Kids,
not very good.
Blockbuster was a place where you used to go to rent video games and movies.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
longer do they exist.
Yeah, then thank God.
That was actually...
didn't you like that job?
I did.
Oh, as a job, I bet you it was great.
It was a good job for comedy. Because I would give people flyers. Like, you came to those shows. Like, we did like decent.
Oh yeah, we had some great shows.
Yeah, so, and that was a lot of that was me promoting to customers at Blockbuster.
Yeah, and yeah. I think you were the first producer that was good that I dealt with. It was like, hey, you know, I kind of felt like a comedian. Like, I would come there, get a couple of bucks, get a meal, have my own table. I mean, there was an Ohio State game on, but, you know, you understand how businesses work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, and it just seemed like no one else was even remotely, like, they tried, but it was more like, they were more comics than producers. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, they just couldn't keep their fucking left brain tied down long enough to.
Well, I used to promote a lot in the punk rock scene. Mm. Like, I put on shows all the time. And, like, after that is when I got into comedy. And, like, music promoters are, I did it because I loved it. I never fucking made money off of it. But, like, music promoters are awful, terrible fucking people. but I fucking hate comedy producers 10 times more.
Jack Ruby was a comedy club owner.
Really?
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Dana Gould, I believe, said something about it.
No shit.
I don't know why people are so surprised that comedy club owners aren't decent people.
Yeah. Like, it just, like, just people who, like, it drives me nuts where it's like comics promoting to other comics. It's pointless. It's fucking stupid.
Oh my God. I realized that pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this doesn't work at all.
No. It's like, that's your only, you know, that's your only fucking market, because, like, it's either other comics or your friends who don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you're basically, you're trying to get, you know, for lack of a better word, people off the street to come see,
right,
you know, some comedy, do a comedy show. And it's like, no, it ends up being like seven comics and like three of their friends. And then there's the one guy who brings 20 friends,
yeah,
goes up second, and then the fucking 20 people leave.
Yeah.
It's like, get the fuck out of here, man.
That guy goes last now. Yeah. He headlines. You brought 20 people, you're the headliner.
A headliner,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah.
There you all go. Right. For your 5-minute set.
Well, actually, I'm always the headliner. But you can go before me.
Yeah. I did that to somebody, though. It was a kid's first time on stage. And he brought like 20 people.
Oh, for the first time on stage, that's perfectly acceptable. No expectations.
Yeah, I just put him up last, and I let him do as much time as he wanted.
Yeah,
but it was
beautiful.
Like the only other people on the show were me and Schizo Bill, I think.
That's a good show.
Yeah. So it was like they got like a decent show, and right, then it's like, here's your friend now.
Where does he go by now?
He goes by his real name.
Oh, that's
Marty
right.
Malloy.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm glad
I've seen him slay before, dude. He's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Man, it's just tough when you're crazy.
Hi, my name is Martin. And like he's so fucking great. I really like that guy.
Yeah, him in front of like a square crowd, so good.
Yeah.
If you get a square crowd, like I keep wanting him to be able to feature at Hilarities.
Yeah.
I feel like with all, like, if you get somebody coming there for Drew Lynch or something, and he comes on before Drew Lynch,
man,
I mean, like, they're going to be talking about that show for a while.
Yeah, you would think, but man, it's just, like, some people, I think a lot of people look at it, because I know I found myself in this boat, too, is, like, it's a risk to put him.
I feel like it's always a risk. When you're putting a comic on stage, it's always a risk because they're fucking crazy people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you've seen them do well and they've been doing it that long, I don't know. I don't know what the resistance is to Schizo Bill in the professional club. I don't know what these people are thinking. Well, it's a variety show. What's more variety than a schizophrenic comedian that talks about being schizophrenic?
Like, yeah.
I think
whack ass comics.
I think part of it is did you ever go to those shows he threw at the Improv?
Who?
Marty.
No.
He would throw shows at the Improv, wow, and do 45 minutes. Like,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. But, you know, watching him do long sets, like some, you know, because of just how his brain works, like sometimes it fries and it takes him a second.
Right.
So it's like you see things like that and your booker instinct goes, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah,
can I trust this guy to lead the crowd along the way for a full 25, which you absolutely can.
Yeah. I've been in that situation before, and it's hard because you have to – I've had to – when I went up to feature at Hilarities, I had to basically convince him, like, hey, man, I don't do feature a lot, but this is the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, I'm only going to get better. And I'm already okay. Like, you've booked people that are way worse than me.
Yeah, they you definitely know what I mean? Have.
And they're
whack
from New
ass
York.
Comics.
Like, their only reason they book these people is because they have agents. You know what I mean? They stay good with the agency.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's it. That's literally the only reason. And it's like, I understand that from a business perspective. I totally understand that. You want to be able to get these guys to come to your club, you know, on off nights and stuff like that.
Right.
Fine, I get it. But, I mean, like, there's no reason to not book me is my point. And I think they look for like a business thing. Like, I think that's the difference maker, is you have to become a small businessman.
Yeah.
And it's super lame, but it's like the only way, unless you're just like that phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, man, it's really a shot in the face when you find out that you're not really that phenomenal.
Yeah.
50 Cent got shot in the face 9 times.
Now,
oh, 50 Cent is very interesting. He's like both a whack rapper and a good rapper.
Yes, agreed, 100%.
I was about to ask like, what exactly he is, because I'm so confused by 50.
Yeah, he's some kind of weird, like crazy genius. Like he's
wackest ass rapper.
Wackest. Give me a second. I'm sorry.
I had to put you on the spot.
The wackest.
It's hard for me to put that on somebody. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no redeeming
like,
qualities.
Don't count any of that trap rap benzo bullshit.
Like, just actually bad at rapping?
Yeah.
Fitty Tyson. You remember that video?
I don't even...
Have you never... Oh, you've seen that video before, right? 50 Tyson with the kids, like, he's rapping, like, in his phone, like, no beat or anything, and he's like, this year I'm 15. Next year I'm going to be 16. But this year I'm 15. And then Kevin Hart did his own like take on it, and it was fucking hilarious,
man.
Wow,
he's not a real rapper, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's the wackest ass rapper. You have to look at people like somehow they've been managed to sell
records.
Oh, I
know,
but
they're still bad.
I think I know.
Okay,
this is really fucked up. I think it might be Puff Daddy.
I find it hard to disagree with you.
I like. Wait, what's the first one called? His first record? The one after Biggie, like right after Biggie died?
Oh, the heartfelt stuff is good.
Like the, is it called, I want to say it's called All in the Family, but it's definitely not.
I think
he's got some really bad songs.
His new name is going to be A Bunker.
Producers in general sometimes get really whack. Like Timbaland, I don't think is very good.
I mean,
his beats are amazing. But
I mean, same thing with like, it's on and off with him, and I'll catch shit for this, and then people also praise this. Like, Kanye, amazing producer. Sometimes very good rapper, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, yeah. What was that album that he sung on?
808s and Heartbreaks.
Yeah.
Like, where it was all like, that was when he like auto-tune, that whole period of fucking rap. You know who's whack as fuck? Drake. Fucking Drake. Like, when he's, like that song that's like, it's the Forever, and he's like, everybody got a deal, I did it without one, you know, I started from nowhere. Motherfucker, you were on Degrassi, and you were the kid in the wheelchair. You don't tell me you didn't start from nowhere. That's bullshit.
Yo, I didn't even have my SAG card for like 3 years, son.
Like, fucking, I can't stand that dude. I really don't like Drake.
I have no opinion on it because, again, like, I literally just don't even tap into him. Like,
that was like well like, after you got out of
it, right? I'll hear him on some NFL game or whatever.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I'll see him on some fucking Chips Ahoy commercial. It's fine. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. That would be my current. I mean, and it could change at any time. But right. Like right now, how I feel, Drake's the wackest ass rapper, in my opinion.
And I like Puff Daddy in a certain way because
too.
He was Biggie's friend. And he did all that stuff.
He's a funny guy, too.
Right. I think he could. If I talked to him, I bet you he'd be a really interesting dude. He's, you know, it's a lot going on. The production he did. I mean, who's a better producer? Like, if you think about the bullshit that he turned into money.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about just turning bullshit into money, no one, like, there's very few people who did it better. I'm trying to
think. Yeah. Because Master P didn't even do that. It was still bullshit.
It was still bullshit. Right. Yeah.
Right. He was a hustler. I feel like Master P is just.
It's hard to call him a producer over a hustler. The thing, though, is, like, dude, it was all trash. That motherfucker made so much goddamn
so
money.
So much money.
I got to give it to him.
Was he worth like $40 million
something
in like the early or late 90s?
Something crazy something like that. And I think he still has like a ton of money.
He's still crazy rich. Like, he had enough time to like try out for basketball teams and stuff.
Good for him.
Man,
yeah.
Do you remember when he started his own movie house? And like he started doing all these direct.
I remember seeing one or two of these movies for sure.
They were always at Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And they usually would get stolen within a week of them coming out.
I have a question. Can you count ICP? I mean, they're definitely whack ass rappers.
Interesting.
But you know what is the point you were bringing up is like, it has to be somebody who has gone on to sell records.
Right.
And like, fucking hate ICP. They're a joke. But like, I gotta also hand it to them like I do Master P, where it's like, those dudes literally were signed to a record label for a very short time.
Yeah.
Everything else they have fucking put out themselves, and those dudes are millionaires multi times over and over. And like, I don't like them, but I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect the shit out of that.
I look at them the same way I look at, like, Fish or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm totally not into it, but I respect the
Fish
authenticity.
Fish is just hippie juggalos.
Right, it is. It totally is.
Yeah. Along with Grateful Dead.
Dude,
anything like
that. When that shit came out, and I was like, what the fuck is this? I have no idea what this is. Mm. How did they get a record deal? It just sounds like somebody mad-libbed a group. It was like Gwar, but without the intensity. Like, what is this? They must have. In my mind, I was like, I guess they just do a good live show.
Dude, I mean, I've always said, if I could go for free, or get like press passes.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go to the gathering.
Oh, yeah.
Simply to people watch.
Yeah.
Like the I can like only imagine the articles I could write.
Yeah.
And I say articles, I could probably write a fucking book after like 3 days of watching all these morons do whippets and fucking take bad ecstasy.
I'm
and
getting married to one of these women. Your standards are great. Thank
yeah.
you.
Let's
but I mean, this. Like the Juggalo fans, didn't they like throw shit at like Tia Tequila or Tila Tequila or whatever like the fuck
you
her
can't,
name is?
You can't like fault them for that.
No, I mean, no. I'm not.
I feel like somebody should. Right?
I'll probably catch shit for this too. I encourage that because fuck her.
She's a Nazi. That's fine.
You know, some people are Nazis.
What was it? Her or what's the Snooki? They did it to Snooki. I think too,
oh, okay.
Which also,
yeah, I think I've heard about
which
that.
You're Jersey trash. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, but the weird thing about ICP is like when they started, because you know,
91, 92,
a little later than that, I think. But like you said, it's like this is Gwar with less intensity or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So they were marketing. They weren't marketing to hip hop fans.
I don't know what they were marketing to. I couldn't possibly
They built their
tell
own
you.
Cult. That's what I'm
right.
saying, dude.
It must have just been that. That's the only thing I can imagine.
It was a lot of, like the people that I met that were getting into ICP, like, when they were starting out were, like, metal fans.
Okay.
And then they crossed over into that. And, but then, like...
Fred Durst, wackest ass rapper.
Oh, I forgot about Fred Durst. And he's a good producer, too.
He really is.
He like owns Interscope still, doesn't he? Like, what's his deal? Didn't he have like a? Didn't he own like a, some kind of offshoot of a major record company?
I'm
for
sure.
A long
I think
time?
So. And then his like the this guy that I used to live with was kept praising like his Limp Bizkit's guitar player as some
West
sort of
Borland.
Yeah, West Borland is some sort of death metal god.
Well, and I mean, was, like
it might, that the might reason, actually. Like, you, I'd be willing to believe that.
The reason I said that about Fred Durst is because you were like metal fans, you know, were the people getting into ICP, and like that is kind of like where the whole new metal scene,
yeah.
like came. All that shit kind of started coming out at the same time, like. Korn and ICP and Limp Bizkit all kind of got their starts at Kid Rock around the same time, you know?
I think I found somebody even whacker. You remember that song Butterfly?
Oh, yeah.
Come, my baby. Come,
oh,
come, my
that,
baby.
Yeah, yeah.
You're my sugar yeah. butterfly.
Was that sugar Crazy Town? Baby.
Crazy Town.
Crazy Town! Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
They only had one song, and it was like, I was like, oh.
Yeah. That song is awful. The only reason I find that song funny is because it's in Orange County.
Yeah.
And I love that movie.
They were soaring straight off of fuckability. Like, they were just like, we're a fuckable band. And here it goes. Like, we're in LA. We're fuckable.
To me, they're a fuck-upable band.
Well, like, I understand what you're saying.
I would fight.
Yeah. I don't want to fuck.
I would assume there. I don't know how many of them there are. I would be willing to fight however many of them there are.
You could tell, like, they're all, like, probably, like, 5'9".
Yes, exactly. I mean, I'm 5'10", but, like, gee, I could...
Right.
I could... Just, I can see that video still in my head, and I want to punch that fucker in the face.
You know, the, more,
butterfly,
we,
sugar,
the more we talk,
baby.
It seems like the late 90s, early 2000s is the death of all music.
There was a weird thing, and I'm just sort of starting to come up with, it's a theory I have about one-hit wonders in the 90s, that a lot of them were better songs than we give them credit for, but they just never got a break because
Every
the producing
time
was so,
I
like,
look around,
go fuck yourself.
It's in my...
That's a good
that
song.
Song.
That's
was
a solid
huge,
song.
Dude,
solid
that song was major huge.
Smash Mouth, their
All-Star.
Lyrics, if you listen to their lyrics and just put them down on paper and read them, you're like, this is just like they're attacking the music industry, but they're doing it in a pop song.
Yeah.
Which is like some fucking, it's some clever shit. Like,
I
that's
saw
some
Smash
Ramones
Mouth.
Type shit.
Yeah. I saw Smash Mouth when I was like 12 years old, like after, like right around the time Astro Lounge came out.
Wow.
And I like, you know, I was young, so I liked them, but like, I still, every once in a while, for shits and giggles, I guess nostalgia, I don't know, I'll put on Astro Lounge and be like, I can still bounce to some of these songs.
It's great background music. It was all about music you could listen to at the Gap. Like,
yeah.
That was the 90s. It was totally like that. Yeah.
Okay, so what's today's music? What's it the background noise to now?
You know, it's interesting. I think the music industry is just so customized now. Like, you can get into whatever the fuck you want to get into. there are new music genres popping up that won't even be picked up for another 5 years. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they're going back, they're going forward, they're mixing stuff, vaporwave. Mm-hmm. I mean, vaporwave is like, it's like an aesthetic like metal was, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's weird because I'll see people that, like, I thought that was just an internet thing.
Yeah.
And then, like, I did a show with someone last weekend who was wearing one of those, like, you know, the cups that they're really into. He was wearing that shirt.
Right.
And I was like, this is an actual thing? Like, people are doing this? Like, wow.
It's a...
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
There's, like, a cup that was, like, a huge design. It's like, it looks...
Are you talking about the purple and green cups?
Yeah, with the one line. And then
Like mall cups.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Somebody was wearing a mall cup shirt, which is like a vaporwave thing.
So they're into aesthetics, I guess. Yeah. So, like, they take it outside of anything else. Like, they just rip things from it. So, like, Arizona iced tea, the green tea, the iconic kind of looking thing. They use that in albums and stuff like that. And they'll pull out, like, the Crystal Pepsi symbol without Crystal Pepsi on it. They just like the... So they like... It's like junk eclecticism. Are you into art at all?
I mean, no, I don't know what the fuck you just said.
Okay, so it's like just... Seeing the bullshit of, like, pop world, like, all this shit that's everywhere, and just picking out the one good thing out of it and just making a collage out of like, fucking Britney Spears' album was terrible, but that fucking one thing in the corner, we're going to fucking use that coloring and fucking add this. It's weird, but it, like, it's almost like making good stuff out of bad stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and art is fucking subjective, so.
Right. No, I enjoy stuff like that a lot because... You know, I find that that's how kind of how I live my life is, like, trying to pick the good stuff out of the nonsense.
Right. What's the fucking deal with all these young kids wearing Champion shit now? Like,
it looks cool.
No, it doesn't. It was fucking that was Kmart brand. Like, yeah, that was like totally was, yep. Shirts were $6, and now, like, I see these kids wearing Champion shirts, and I'm like, how much you pay for that? Like, $25, $30. I'm like, you're all idiots.
Because that's a junk eclecticism I was talking about before. Like, just the logo alone, if you put it really big across that, it kind of looks cool. But it won't look cool in, like, three years.
It didn't look cool then. It doesn't look cool now. Right. Whatever. I don't get it. Like, I don't understand those trends.
You probably
it's
shouldn't,
like, I take, you know, like, when Abercrombie Fitch comes back, like, I'm just going to be like, that shit was whack fucking 20 years ago. It's whack fucking now.
God,
get the fuck, like, or Aeropostale, all that stupid shit.
No, my sister was really into Aeropostale, and, I don't understand the appeal of wanting to, like, here is, like, your rubber stamp thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, you're representing this brand, and it says everything that it needs to say about you.
And people who had, don't get me wrong, I fucking hate Abercrombie Fitch, but the people who had no business wearing it. Like, have you ever walked in, when they had stores, I don't know if they still do, but it's like, you walk in that store, everybody looks like a fucking model, and it smells of... whatever fucking fragrance that is, Abercrombie and Fitch, it's like, and then there's, like, people who look like fucking me wearing that shit. It's like, you have no business fucking wearing that. You look like a fucking tool.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like I never had to, like, fit in because it didn't fit in anyway, so I just had to get used to it. So I sort of understand it from the back end where it's like, well, you're just trying to fit in. I understand people doing it. I never, like... You know what I mean? Like,
dude, I was
it's
such
just never
like
something
a
that happened to me.
Because, like, when I was in middle school, is when I remember Abercrombie and Fitch being popular.
Yeah.
And, like eighth grade. And, like, that, you know, I got into punk rock probably around fourth, fifth grade. Yeah. But, like, so by the time I was in eighth grade, I, you know, I was a fucking savant.
Yeah, I was
you
just
know?
Gonna say, I'm like,
and,
wow.
Like, you know, super into the Dead Kennedys and anti fascist shit. And, like, oh, I remember in our eighth grade so class picture, I had a gray shirt on that I took a Sharpie and wrote anti prep. on it with, like, an anarchy over the A.
Oh, my God.
And, like, I look at that shit now and I cringe. I'm like, you're as fucking stupid as the people wearing Abercrombie and Fitch. bitch.
Fucking Teletubbies are a tool of the system, man.
I mean, they kind of are.
I mean, yeah. Well.
Dude, watch those videos. Like, I watch this channel all the time called, like, Most Amazing Top 10. And they do all kinds of, like, creepy, weird shit. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, there's this one that's, like, Top 10 Terrifying Teletubby Theories.
Okay.
And I've yet to watch that one. But what was somebody released this a few years ago. I think I remember showing you. Somebody took the Teletubbies, made it black and white, and then put Atmosphere by Joy Division over it. Oh. And it was creepy, yeah. But fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's got to be like one of those old.
I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you when we're done.
Okay. Yeah, that's
That's got to be freaky.
It's really easy to do stuff like that now, and it seems like just because you can find fucking anything, it seems like it would be easier to avoid whack ass stuff. But is the real issue? Not that it's whack, is that it got popular?
I mean, it's just a tool of marketing now. So, like, as long as these companies feel like it still make money off of it, it's just going to keep... They have to toe the line between, like, actually being artistically good and being controllable.
Hmm. And, like, the way you said, I think you mentioned earlier that, like, you know, the record industry, you said something about the music industry basically being dead. And it is, like, with the, like, in, like... Record labels are like big record labels like Warner and shit like that are basically obsolete now. In 10 years, they won't exist.
They'll have to diversify.
They're basically just distribution now. That's right, all they are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like they don't give big advances.
Yeah.
You know, like
they have
that's
no physical thing they're giving out anymore.
Exactly.
It's
like,
just promotion for shows.
100%. And it's like, that's how artists now make their money is touring and merch. So it's like, and don't get me wrong, some people do price gouge.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, like that's how they make their money. So if they're providing you entertainment, like they got a lot of overhead. Like, you know, and I'm talking like bigger stuff that's going to play at like the Gund Arena or like the fucking Wolstein Center or whatever the fuck. Like, stuff like that. There's a lot of fucking overhead there. And so when you're pumping out $35 for a t-shirt, that's, like, so they can make some fucking money, man.
Right.
You know, like, because they, remember, record companies used to just throw fucking money at people.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
And I feel like, also, I feel like, and this is something I sort of saw coming when I started doing comedy, is, like, I felt like live entertainment was become more important. Because of how easy it would be to get recorded material and how, like, you know, after a while, it's like less and less and less. It's just like a commercial, like I said, for your live entertainment. Yeah. And like now it's just like, just forget about it. Like I didn't even, that's why I put myself on Bandcamp or YouTube. Happy Black History Month is the name of the album. And just put it out there for free. And it's not even like really an album. It's an EP to test to see what's out there.
Sure.
Right. Just a couple of good sets. It'll be weird, but it'll be funny too.
Cousin Mason, he has been really focusing on producing and like the... My, you know, for lack of a better word, company, more like a collective. I don't like calling it a company yet because I don't make money off of it. Mm-hmm. But like I put, it's called Above Below Entertainment. And like I, from the get-go, like it started off as a podcast network, but I had a way bigger vision for it than that. And so like now I, you know, my company, whatever, Above Below is partially responsible for Wrestle Void, the magazine that I do, the podcast that we put out, the I did a music video for the band Old Souls that I teamed up with Sickening Pictures on, and I put out Chris Paw's record.
Oh yeah,
You know, digitally, but like, and me and him are supposed to work on another project again.
Dope.
But my cousin Mason, he's been putting together a record, and like, so I'm gonna get to if he still wants me to, because he said to me, he was like, I don't want to put it out with anybody else.
Yeah.
And like, so I'm gonna get to release, and like I've heard a lot of it and it's really fucking good.
Yeah. Because
I wouldn't put out something I didn't believe in. I'm not doing it for nepotism. Like, he's really fucking good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to be able to like add that to my resume of like, hey, like, look, I'm down to do whatever as long as it's fucking good.
Right.
Speaking of really fucking good, happy Black History Month. Available on streaming services.
Jeremy, you've got your own fucking sweet ass. I really liked your, I don't know if I ever told you this, but your CD. Was it DVD?
It was a DVD.
It was a DVD, yeah. It was very good.
Were you
yeah.
vaping on stage?
Yeah, it was, and I remember, like, I knew your act and everything. I was kind of wondering, like, because sometimes I don't like watching the same thing done the same way because it's a pet peeve of mine. But you had, like, new stuff you just I've never heard this stuff before, and we were, like, around each other a lot.
A lot.
Did you, like, were those new jokes you did that
yes.
night? That was, yeah. That
trigger warning is what he's talking about,
trigger
right?
warning, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I started doing that, too, and there's something about it. If you give a good joke that's, like, kind of good and you're a decent comic, it's a feeling. You could change the whole set, man.
Yeah.
Doing like a new joke that works well, you just get so fucking
Yeah. It's been tough for me lately because I took a year off.
Oh, okay.
And I really have to get those like muscles back.
It's good to take a break, man. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I learned. Taking a break is great.
Yeah.
Because you start turning into this robot of comedy.
When
you keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And there's this whole like hustle mentality with a lot of comics, but it's like, you can take that too far, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's, I just didn't like I took time off because basically, like, to put it in basketball terms, I mentally tore my ACL. I'm still rehabbing it.
Yeah.
But,
I understand that.
Yeah, but it's, things will change. But, you can catch Michael, all around town. Find him on Facebook, Twitter. Happy Black History Month on YouTube. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Follow me on Instagram. Mike Ivy Stands Up 2. That's my main one. I'm trying to go into that and TikTok. But yeah. I'm not on TikTok yet because I don't know what's going on.
I'll grab your Instagram when we're off air. But
thank you, Jordan, so much, guys.
I don't think anybody hates whack-ass rap as much as Michael Ivy.
No, there is another. I won't apologize again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep standing up and falling on my face. Feed me nothing ages. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge paper. Drunkenness. I keep a bruise in my brain and under the punches, and I was meant to take.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.